OSU SpursCast, episode 565. My name is Paul Garcia, and I'm your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be going solo and looking at the Spurs' three-point defense in their last six games, diving into the December 15 trade restriction lifting, and what that means for the Spurs players on the roster. Let's get into this episode. Since the last SpursCast, the Spurs have gone 2-2, losing in overtime to the Cavs, then defeating Phoenix without Devin Booker in Mexico City, also in overtime, and they had a 25-point lead in Houston against the Rockets, but they couldn't hold that lead, and the Rockets ended up winning that game in regulation. And the Spurs' most recent win came against the Brooklyn Nets on Thursday evening in San Antonio, where the Spurs' starters got the team dug into a hole early on, but then in the second half, it was the second unit that helped provide a spark with Patty Mills, with Derek White, with Lonnie Walker, Jakob Poeltl, that helped the Spurs kind of get that lead back. And then, of course, the starters were able to hold that lead in the last 5 minutes of the game, and San Antonio walked away with a double-digit win on Thursday against Brooklyn. So overall, in their last six games, actually, the Spurs are actually 4-2 after the rough start for them, you know, especially considering they could have been in all going into all those different overtimes. You know, you could look at it two different ways. They could be this overall record of 11-16 because they went 4-2 since that Pistons blowout, or you could look at it, what if everything went in their favor in these close games? Well, then they would be 5-1 in those last six, which would have a record of 12-15, which would be the 8th seed at the moment in the West. Or if things could have gone totally south for them and they could have ended up going 1-5 in these last six games, which would basically have them at 8-19 overall at this point, which would have been 13th out in the West standing. So overall, the Spurs split that where they went, not split it, but you know, they went 4-2 in their last six, and they are playing better basketball at the moment. Patty Mills kind of spoke to this after the game on Thursday to the media, where he said basically like the defense is improving, but it's not, you know, it's not making like the kind of leaps and bounds that the team thought they would have it by this point. It's a very slow process, and it's going to continue to take a lot more time. But even like Coach Pop said, you know, in the win against Brooklyn, they were able to string together a few quarters where they held Brooklyn below 30 points in multiple quarters, and that's a good sign for their defense. And when you look at the Spurs' defense overall, they are trending kind of in the right direction now. They've gone from bottom 10, like 25th to like 27th, all the way down to 20th now as of Friday evening that I am recording this episode. So the signs are there that they're improving, and they find themselves just a game out of eighth out West for the eighth seed, and then also just two games out of the seventh seed because the bottom of the West is really having trouble, all those teams. So yeah, so that's kind of where the Spurs stand now as through 27 games. So now I'm going to go ahead and get into some of these some other different topics here that I've been noticing why the Spurs have improved a little bit here. So as I was looking at the Project Spurs game tracker on defense after the Nets win, I noticed that the Spurs' last six opponents since that blowout in Detroit have been shooting poorly from three against San Antonio. When you look at that tracker, I like to color code whether or not you're getting a point per shot. And on the opponent threes, almost like every single one of their opponents in the last six games is like in the red. They're just getting less than a point per shot further from three. And so that's actually helped San Antonio's defense overall. So I want to begin there. I went back and I want to look at the numbers and say, you know, as I look at the Spurs' 3-point defense specifically, I'm looking at, you know, is it really that the Spurs are improving defensively here in these last six games at the 3-point line, or is it that the quality of the opponent mixed in with maybe just the opponent just missing shots? So that's kind of where I'm going to go through in this first topic, which is kind of digging into the Spurs' 3-point defense in the last six games. So overall, you know, when you look at it, as I mentioned, the Spurs are 20th defensively. They're allowing 110.7 points per 100 possessions. When you strip that down to just the last six games, they're actually fourth in defense, holding teams to 102.4 points per 100. Again, it's the last six games, and I mentioned it's fourth. It looks really good. You know, you hear top four defense, but again, it's just small, really small sample size, and a lot of that is too against teams that are not, you know, outside of the Houston Rockets. A lot of these teams that they've been playing against these last few games, except for the Houston Rockets and Brooklyn Nets, should I say, the rest of these teams aren't really that good when you look at their record. So the quality opponent is something you have to consider when looking at the six-game sample size. So let's first begin with opponent three-point attempts. What's going on here? So during the regular season as a whole, the Spurs are allowing 33.9 three-point attempts from the opponent, which is 17th. in these last six games, they're actually allowing way more threes. They're allowing 41.5 three-point attempts from the opponent. Now, you have to take into the fact that a lot of these games went to overtime, so that is more shots, obviously, for the opponent. So that's 30th in the league. So they're allowing a lot more threes right now. However, the accuracy from the opponent is what's really showing up in these numbers and why San Antonio's defensive numbers look so good. Typically, teams shoot 35.8% against the Spurs' defense, which ranks San Antonio 16th in opponent three-point accuracy. Not good. Well, you know, right below league average. In these last six games, opponents are shooting 26.9%. So that makes the Spurs first in opponent accuracy, three-point accuracy, where they're just not making anything. They're making 27% of their threes, which is not a good number, even though they're taking a lot more threes than the Spurs typically allow. So that's part of it, the fact that the opponents in these last six games are shooting really, really poorly, just terrible from three. And that's why, as I said, in the game tracker, you see a lot of red in those columns in the accuracy. Like I mentioned, opponents' points per shot. Typically, when teams take threes against the Spurs, they're getting 1.09 points per shot, three-point shot. In these last six games, they're getting 0.81 points per shot. That's like taking a bunch of mid-rangers, basically, if you're like a pretty decent mid-range shooting team. That's kind of what the equivalent is right now for the Spurs when teams are shooting those shots. Now, another stat that indicates whether or not this is just poor shooting or if the Spurs are actually having some sort of effect defensively in their players. And there is one stat that kind of proves that the Spurs are having a little bit of an upgrade in effort or scheme to show that they actually are having an impact in terms of limiting certain number of opponent wide open threes. And that's the wide open three statistic. Typically during the season, 45% of the opponent's shots against the Spurs' defense are wide open threes. So of their three-point shots for the opponent, 45% are usually wide open. That's just right below 50%. Almost half their threes are almost wide open. However, during the these last six games, teams are only shooting 40.6% of their shots that are wide open. So again, you do see some effort on the Spurs' part, the fact that they are limiting opponent wide open threes. So that is something to, again, you have to give compliments to the players, to the scheme. It is working that they're not allowing as much wide open threes. Also, what's going on here is that when teams do get wide open threes right now, they're not shooting very well. Typically, they shoot 37% against the Spurs when they get a wide open three opponents. Right now, they're shooting just 25% on wide open threes. So again, part of this is that the Spurs are making a little bit of an effort to take away some open threes. But another part of this is that the teams are just not good shooting teams right now. They're shooting just 25% when they're wide open from three. What are some effects on the rest of the defense? You're seeing more attempts at the rim for the opponent. You know, just thinking of that Nets game comes to mind, where like Spencer Dinwiddie and Jared Allen were just basically living at the rim against San Antonio's defense. But the Spurs were doing a better job of limiting Brooklyn's three-point attempts and really just contesting them as well. So that's kind of where you're seeing is that opponents have seen some more attempts at the rim, but their accuracy has gone down a little bit. Now, I think that's a little bit, you know, I think that matters more so when you look at who's playing at the five and also who's out there like trying to limit dribble penetration. So obviously we know that when Jakob Poeltl's at the five, the teams, the defenses, the defensive numbers at the rim are a lot better for San Antonio, as I've discussed here on San Antonio, whereas when LaMarcus Aldridge's at the five, teams do shoot better there at the rim. So some of it is personnel and things like that, but teams are shooting more at the rim, but just less efficient is what the numbers are saying right now. Mid-range looks are kind of pretty much the same. They're not too big in terms of how many mid-range shots the Spurs are giving up, and teams are still shooting pretty well against them for mid-range when they do take those shots. And free throw rate is also very similar as well. So that doesn't have a huge difference on it. So a big part of this is the fact that, yes, the Spurs are making a better effort of limiting wide open threes from the opponent, but it's also the fact that the opponents in these last six games are just shooting terrible from three. Now, I also want to look at the quality of opponent in terms of their three-point shooting. And so I was like, you know, are these really good three-point shooting teams, or are they, you know, pretty bad or average? And it turns out that most of them are some of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. So let's look at the Rockets. I know the Rockets are first in terms of attempts from three, but they're 23rd in accuracy. It's shooting 34.6%, and the Spurs have played them twice now in these last six games. Let's look at the Cavs. They're 25th in three-point accuracy, 33.6%. Let's look at the Suns, 19th in three-point accuracy, 35.3%. And then let's look at the Nets, 26th in three-point accuracy, 33.6%. The only team that's just barely better than the league average at three-point accuracy is the Kings, who shoot 35.9%, and they're just 14th, so they're barely better than league average. So again, part of this last six games and why you've seen some of these improvements defensively from the Spurs' defense is the fact that they have gotten a lot of opponents who aren't great 3-point shooting teams. You know, I really want to see what these type of numbers look like when they start getting some teams that are in the top 10 of 3-point accuracy. Well, then that's something to watch, because you want to look at the wide open threes and see if the Spurs are limiting those attempts, or there's teams are still getting the same amount of shots from the wide open three. So again, this is kind of what I wanted to focus on a little bit, just because, you know, these numbers really kind of stuck out to me, the fact that, you know, the defense from the three is improving, and obviously that's having an effect on the entire defense, because the team is slowly, as Patty Mills mentioned, they're starting to slowly improve. He says that they're not, you know, taking steps back, and you're seeing that in the numbers and the fact that they're finally, you know, going back down to 20th as of this recording, and we'll see in the next few weeks if they're able to get within, you know, the next step is for them to get close to league average, about 15th, and we'll see if they can make that progress, or if they're going to stay there in the 20s or fall even further behind, closer to 30, if things go the wrong way for them. So that's kind of where the defense stands, and one of the topics I wanted to cover in terms of discussing the Spurs on that end of the floor. Next, I want to go ahead and look at the December 15th trade deadline that recently lifted, and I want to provide some details on what that means for players on the Spurs' roster. So on December 15th, players who signed in the summer with a new team, and also like rookies that were drafted, that who signed their summer contracts, all those players are the trade restriction is now lifted for those players, where they can now be traded if they wanted to be included in the deal and two sides agreed on a certain type of deal. So for the Spurs, who does that impact? That impacts four players. That makes Damari Carroll available now. Not available, but he's eligible to be traded. Trey Lyles is also eligible to be traded. And then also the two rookies, Keldon Johnson and Lucas Samanich. Now obviously, I don't think that the Spurs would move Keldon and Luka, just because they're young. They're going through the Austin Spurs route. And unless it was like for an all-star in his prime, I doubt that any kind of these young players like Derek White, DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker, Luka or Keldon are even able to be even put into a package if San Antonio would even consider that. However, some of the role players are interesting to watch. Somebody like Damari Carroll, you know, he signed with San Antonio this year, 3-year deal, partially guaranteed. He's not getting any minutes, really. He just hasn't been playing. And the reason for that is because Trey Lyles has played well for Pop. And so he's put Trey Lyles ahead of in the rotation. And then you have Rudy Gay there still. You have Aldridge. So when it comes to the four, there's really no place for Carroll to get any minutes. Now, when it comes to the three, Lonnie Walker's kind of emerged from the scene there, and so he's been playing really well. And so he's obviously ahead. He or Marco Bellinelli are constantly kind of competing for minutes there at the backup three behind DeMar DeRozan. So really, there's unless Pop was going to take away all of Marco's minutes, but at this point now, 27 games in, it doesn't look like that's the case. Marco continues to be a player who gets different minutes at different roles depending on the game. Like just last night, for an instance, he started the second half at the four. So Pop's kind of going to continue to trust Marco more so than Carroll. So I do wonder if Carroll would be a player that maybe other teams to look at call about for the Spurs, just because, again, he's not really playing and he's kind of just stuck there at the end of the bench, unless because Lonnie's obviously ahead of him, Marco's ahead of him, and then over there at the four you got Trey Lyles ahead of him, and so is Rudy Gay. Trey Lyles, like I mentioned, is also eligible to be traded. I don't think he'll get moved just right now unless he had to be moved, just because, again, he's playing. He has actually an actual role for this team. He's actually starting right now. If he's not starting, then he's coming off the bench. So Pop continues to like what he's seeing from Trey Lyles, and he's continuing to give him a role. Now, aside from those four players, with the December 15th trade restriction lifting, here's the other players that could be moved: DeMar DeRozan, LaMarcus Aldridge, Patty Mills, Marco Bellinelli, Jakob Poeltl, Bryn Forbes, Lonnie Walker, Derek White, and Metu. Again, I'm not saying these guys are going to get moved. I'm just saying these guys are eligible to be moved now in terms of the CBA. So let's go through some of these names, though, and see if where they stand on the roster. DeRozan, as we've talked about since the beginning of the season, is in an interesting situation because he is one of the Spurs' go-to players. However, he does have that option this summer where he can either opt out of his player option and become an unrestricted free agent and test the free agent market, or the Spurs and his side can come together and go through it, put a contract extension together. So that's also an option. I don't think that will happen, just because that could have happened way back in October, and it really hasn't. So we don't know what the future holds for DeRozan, But again, the reason why, even though this DeRozan's their leading scorer, you know, he's their go-to guy, the reason why his name might come up in trade rumors is, again, because the fact that his contract, where it's at right now, with the fact that if he were to walk away from San Antonio this summer, they could lose him for nothing and not get any kind of assets back. And whereas if you put him in a trade, well, then obviously you can try to get something back from him for him if he were to walk away this summer. So there hasn't been really any rumors. There's been rumors of other teams been interested in DeRozan, but there hasn't been any kind of rumors of the Spurs shopping DeRozan. So with the team continuing to play well and being right there within striking distance of a playoff seed, I don't think that we're going to hear his name on the Spurs' end, putting him in trade scenarios publicly. So that's kind of where his contract stands. Just like DeRozan, you know, Aldridge is one of the Spurs' go-to players. You know, I don't think he'll get moved just because, again, he has this year, he is fully guaranteed, but the next year he has a partial guarantee and it's going to go into full guarantee by January 1st. Once that date strikes, Aldridge will make $24 million next season. And again, because the Spurs are not going into full rebuild mode and we see them right there on the cusp of making the playoffs, I think that they're going to continue to go for a playoff seed. And so that obviously requires keeping both Aldridge and DeRozan. So I don't think you'll see, his name out there, even though, he's one of those players who teams would think that might get, you know, be on the trade block if the team were to go way south, Spurs, but that's not the case. They're actually getting their play better. Patty Mills, I don't see him out there on the trade block just because, again, he's been one of their best leaders. I mean, he was the reason why he was a big reason why they beat the Nets that most recent with 27 points. He's having a really good year as of this morning on a Friday morning when I checked the stats. He was he's the third leading scorer on the team, scoring 12 points per game, shooting lights out from three. We've seen how impactful Patty has been. He's a locker room leader, culture leader for this team right now, and his contract's not bad for the production that he's giving this season when you compare him to some other players. Marco Bellinelli is interesting to watch because, as I mentioned, Pop continues to go to him. However, you know, what happens if Lonnie eventually does get that role and just, you know, kind of just starts getting max minutes, not max minutes, but, you know, the main minutes there at the backup three, or even becomes a starter? Well, then Marco's playing time could diminish a lot more. I know he's struggling from his shot. So you just never know if other playoff teams might want to call the Spurs and look at Marco. But right now, you know, for now, I do think he'll stick around on this roster. Jakob Poeltl, I don't see the Spurs moving him. He's playing really, really well off the bench. He can be a restricted free agent this summer as long as the Spurs tender him a qualifying offer. I believe it's a $5 million. So, yeah, I think that for them right now, just the way he's playing, I think they would definitely want Jakob to stay within their organization in the future once he becomes a restricted free agent. So that'll be interesting to watch for him. But I don't see him getting moved by the trade deadline. Brent Forbes is interesting to watch as well because, you know, I don't see him getting moved, but because of Lonnie's rise and because DeJounte's rise as well, because even though DeJounte's been here all year this season, you got to remember there's like a new wrinkle here where he's no longer on the minutes restriction. So that's a good thing. That means that he, Derek White, and Lonnie Walker can all kind of start getting some more minutes if Pop, you know, starts allowing that. So if there's a case where Pop constantly wants those three players on the floor at most of the time, well, then that's going to impact players, you know, role players like in the guard position and wing position, like Bryn Forbes, like Marco Bellinelli. So that's why I say that you never know, you know, from now until February 7th, which is the trade deadline, if Forbes starts losing his role in his minutes, well, then, hey, maybe teams start calling about him. But we'll see. For now, I don't think that he gets moved. As I mentioned, I think Lonnie, Derek White, and are pretty much untouchable unless, you know, it was like an all-star in his prime coming to the team. Just same thing for, you know, Keldon Johnson and Lucas Samardzija, same situation there for all those young players. Chimezie Metu is interesting to watch because, you know, he's continuing to travel back and forth to San Antonio and Austin. He has his contract, even though it's fully guaranteed for this season. Next year, though, by I think it's by September, they have a choice of Spurs, whether or not they're going to guarantee it or not. And if they're not planning on having him in their future, because right now, you know, it's hard for him to even get on the floor unless it's like a blowout win or loss. Then maybe they look, you know, I just don't think teams are going to call on just because he hasn't had the experience, he hasn't had the playing time, and so teams are pretty much probably aren't watching those games unless they're watching. There's somebody's a scout's really, really watching the Austin games and really likes Metu, but you know, we'll see where Metu stands. But again, I just right now as of where the Spurs stand right now on December 20th that I'm recording this episode, I don't see them making any kind of trade moves. Something that Bobby Marks of ESPN has kind of noted is that the Spurs are not a team who make in-season trades a lot of times. At least that's not what their record shows. The last time they made an in-season trade was way back in the championship year of 2014 when they moved Nando DiColo for Austin Day. So, and it was like a minor move. You know, Austin Day wasn't a player who actually played in the playoffs or anything like that, or had a huge role. Same thing for Nando before he got traded. So again, Historically, the Spurs don't make any kind of in-season trades. That's why I'd rather, if I had to place a bet, I would say that they don't make a move. You know, I know that's not exciting for the fans, but the only way I do see them making a move is, again, if they start falling behind really seriously in the standings by like late January, we just see that they're like 7 to 10 games out of the 8th seed. Well, then I think you see them start making some calls and things like that. But, you know, we'll see what happens. It's still about a month and a half away, the trade deadline on February 7th. So that's kind of where the players stand. Two players I didn't mention that are eligible are Rudy Gay and DeJounte Murray, and that's because they are not eligible. Rudy Gay will not be eligible to be traded until January 15th. And the reason why his limit or date takes a little bit longer is because Rudy resigned with the team. Whenever you resign with your original team in the summer, you're allowed to, you have up until January 15th with them before the trade restriction lifts. And Murray cannot be traded until April 21st of 2020. And the reason for that is because Murray just recently signed a extension with the team, a 4-year extension, and a player who signs an extension can't be moved for 6 months. So, obviously I don't think Murray's gonna get traded. He's untouchable pretty much at this point, unless, like I mentioned, it's like for an all-star in his prime or something like that. So he's pretty, you know, his name shouldn't even come up at all. And then, you know, we'll see what happens here with the rest of the roster, as I mentioned, as the season continues to go along here for the Spurs. So we'll see where that goes. All right, so before I close up this episode, I want to remind you all to please visit projectspurs.com. Colin Reed has a series on the Spurs' defense he's writing about, where the first two parts are available to be read right now on Project Spurs. Steven Anderson continues to keep you updated with analysis after each game. His most recent piece was the three standout players in the game against Brooklyn. Benjamin Bornstein's latest prospect watch for the draft is over on Onyeka Okongwu, I believe that's correct, from USC. So again, if you want to keep up on the draft and where some players that might fit the Spurs' system in June, keep up with Ben's work. And then I also wrote about the December 15th trade deadline this week too. So again, if you want some more details on where everybody's contracts stand and all those things, that piece is there with a lot of different information for you on each Spurs player. Also, be sure to check out Project Spurs Premium if you haven't. New information continues to get uploaded the day and night after each. So sometimes during the day, if I can get the information of a game, or if not, the next day, I'm able to upload the Project Spurs Premium page. So this episode was written and recorded by me, Paul Garcia. As always, I want to thank Michael DeLeon for mixing and producing this episode. Since the holidays are approaching, the Spurscast will be taking a few days off, barring any breaking news. So, you know, unless somebody gets traded or something, then we're going to take a little bit of a break here for the holidays. But again, from the whole staff at Project Spurs, we wish you all a safe and happy holiday break. And we're going to see you in 2020. Thank you. Have a great day.